Well, I may have won the prize for traveling the greatest distance to come here this morning, 150 miles. I'll explain that. I was invited to perform a wedding in Santa Ynez yesterday at about 4:30, and so I was there and was pleased to do that. I had gone up on Friday before, and it was a daughter of a woman who worked in my office when I was in the Senate. In fact, when I was in the Senate, up in Sacramento, I had some young people who were part of my staff, and I ended up performing three different weddings for members of that staff. I kind of teased people and said, you know, if you want to get married, just come and join my staff. And I felt kind of like marrying Sam, the old character that was in a Little Abner cartoon. Maybe many of you don't remember that, or certainly are too young to remember that. But anyway, that was, and I had a other part of a delightful week. I was able, as Bill was mentioning, to go out to Pepperdine all day Thursday and listen to some wonderful lessons and a great sermon by Sarah Barton. By the way, those of you who are fearful that if a woman were to lead in worship ought to listen to Sarah Barton, we've deprived ourselves of a lot of wisdom, and because that was one of the more powerful sermons I've heard in the last few months. And then Wednesday I was in Sacramento because the president of Pasadena City College had asked me to go with her, make rounds to help Pasadena City College in its seeking of funds for a certain facility. So it's been a nice week, an enjoyable week, and I'm glad to be here this morning. You know, a month ago, John Reed preached here, and I was very impressed by John Reed and what he had to say. And he talked about his experience in going as the minister of the Hilltop Church of Christ. And when he got there, I think they had a total of 11 members, and now they have several hundred. And one of the stories that he told among their first converts was a woman who called the church and began to sob and describe her plight. She was someone who was addicted to drugs. She was very fearful that her child would be taken from her, and she needed help. And so after a period of several months of the involvement of John Reed and his wife, this woman was converted. And subsequently, a number of other people with great problems were converted, and they was added to the church. In fact, he told the story, if you recall, of a man he played golf with. And this man, just accidentally, they were teamed together, or, of course, John didn't think of it as accidental. He thought of it as providential. And he played golf with the man, and the man on occasions expressed some rather strong expletives when his golf ball went astray. And they played again. And then finally John shared with him the fact he was a minister, and the man said, well, I have to say that I've been in rebellion to God because I lost my mother at age 9. And that traumatic event turned me against religion. But he recognized that his own life was lacking, and eventually he too was converted. And as I thought about that bold way in which John had gone about in terms of reaching out to broken people, then it kind of struck me, that's really what Jesus did. That's following the example of Jesus. You know, Jesus came to really initiate the kingdom of God on earth. That was his mission. Well, maybe you'd think the first thing he would do to go and call on Caiaphas, the high priest of Jerusalem, and get his permission. Or maybe he would turn to some of the rulers like Herod Antipas. But no, Jesus really did something kind of different. He preached to the poor. He looked about and saw people who were broken. In fact, on one occasion, he said to his disciples, he said, if a shepherd has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds him, truly I tell you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it will be with the will of your Father in heaven that if one of these little ones should be lost. And that particular occasion, he was talking about children, but that was his mission. There's another great story in the Bible. Jesus was invited to a feast in the home of Simon the Pharisee. I'm not sure why Simon invited him. I think it was more out of curiosity. It wasn't because he was a devoted follower, as when the story unfolds, we'll discover. But here's an itinerant preacher who's getting big crowds. So let's just have him come in and I'll invite him to my house. Well, in the midst of that great feast, suddenly a woman breaks in, uninvited, but she hears that Jesus is there and she is so thankful for Jesus. She has gotten together a wonderful jar of ointment, very precious. And she puts it on his head. And then she begins to weep. And the tears fall on Jesus' feet. And she takes her hair and wipes his feet. And some of them in Simon's house whispered and said, you know, if he knew the kind of woman this was, he wouldn't have anything to do with it. She's a sinner. And then Jesus, understanding a little bit about their response, he looks over and he says, you know, Simon, when I came into your house, you didn't wash my feet. You didn't put any ointment on my head. But this woman did all of this. And then he began to say that her sins were forgiven. Of course, that alone offended them. But there were scenes after scenes in Jesus' life when it was the most unlikely person that he sought out. One time he healed a wild demoniac outside of a city. So wild that they had him chained up, but he would break the chains. We would describe the man as a psychotic, a violent psychotic, I might add. But Jesus heals him. Jesus looks him up. He sees the humanity of this man. And those are the same stories that you see always in the life of Jesus. He stops at a well once in Samaria. And there's a woman who comes and he says, how about giving me a drink? And then he strikes up a conversation with him. And at first she's a little suspicious. And he says, I could give you some water that you would never have to thirst again. And finally she says, well, he says something about her husband. She said, I don't have any husband. He said, yeah, I know. He said, you have been married 5 times and the man you're living with now is not your husband. But Jesus then began to talk to her and relate to her very well. So she is so excited that she runs into the city and said, I found the one, the Messiah. Now, it's interesting, when his disciples came and saw him in this conversation, even though Samaritans were considered half-breeds, it doesn't say they were astounded because he was talking to a Samaritan. It says that they were astounded because he's talking to a woman. Because that was a very patriarchal society. And you know, that's another thing. Jesus, how did he attract so many women? Well, because he treated them as human. Because he forgave them. Because he loved them. Mary Magdalene, who was one of the first witnesses of the resurrection, had infirmities. He had cast out 7 demons in her life. The woman with the issue of blood, and all these, the many women who understood, here's somebody who does not consider us inferior, who treats us as a way we want to be treated. And so Jesus, he would look out and also remind them, by the way, not all of God's people are Jews. In fact, on one occasion, he ran across a centurion. Now, centurions, they were Romans. They were, the word centurion simply means over 100 men. So he was a military commander. This man comes and says, I've got a servant that I care deeply about. He's very, very ill. I want you to come and heal him. And Jesus said, I'll do that. And the man said, oh, no, you don't have to come to my house. I know if you'll just say the word. And Jesus said, I haven't found so great a faith as this in all of Israel. Oh, I could continue on with all these stories of Jesus. One time he said, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And look at his disciples. 4 common men that were fishermen. They were his first 12 apostles, Peter, Andrew, James, and John. He also picked Matthew. Now Matthew was a publican. Now we may not know what that is, but that means a tax collector. Well, why? Well, tax collectors aren't always the most popular people, but these were particularly unpopular because they were collecting taxes for the Romans who occupied the land of Israel. Now imagine how if our land was under occupation by some foreign power and somebody was collecting taxes for that foreign power, we would consider them a traitor. But Jesus chose Matthew. And another occasion, he saw another tax collector, a man who had crawled up in a tree to see Jesus, and he said, come down here, Zebedee. Zacchaeus. He said, you're the fellow I'm going to have dinner with today. I'm going to your house. And of course, then the man was astounded, and at the end he says, I'm going to give half my goods to the poor. If I've robbed anybody, I'll make it good. So that's the story of Jesus. And it sounds like it's a little bit the story of John Reed. Well, are there anybody doing that today? Are we more interested in filling our pews with respectable people? Or are we looking out at the broken people? Well, yeah, there have been Christians who've done those sort of things. You know, the story of the Salvation Army is a pretty remarkable story. In 1850, a man by the name of William Booth decided he was going out and preach on the streets. And who was he going to preach to? Drunkards, gamblers, people that had lived broken lives. And it was remarkable the kind of response that he began to get. And of course, the Salvation Army continues that tradition today with 1.7 million people. You know, if there's somebody who's homeless, who's broken, who's has addicted to drink, who's had a mess of their life, they come to the Salvation Army and they find people with open arms. Or I think of Greg Boyle, who, as a Roman Catholic priest, went down into East Los Angeles. And you know who he began to talk to? He talked to members of gangs. Those rugged, violent people with tattoos all over them. But he began to talk to them and tell them about his love and his interest in changing their lives. In fact, he started something called Homeboy Industries, where that they could have jobs. And it's been a remarkable work. It's changed a lot of lives. These are people that suddenly, instead of going out and stealing, begin to work with their hands and do good. And so there are all kinds of examples like that. The African Christian Hospital in our own tradition, which is working in Nigeria and Ghana, What do they do? Well, these people in Nigeria and Ghana frequently, they don't have any means to go to a doctor, but all they can do is go to a clinic in one of these African countries and find the healing hands of dedicated doctors and nurses, and also hear something about Jesus Christ. Well, I got to thinking about that. Wonder what the idea is. Where are ways in which we might do something like that? Well, I don't know. I won't tell you that I've spent my life that way. I've done a few things in my life. I remember in the New Haven Church when I first arrived there and was the minister for that church. We were meeting in a rented hall with just 25 members. One-third of those were African-American, and so we had a mixture of people in the church, from domestic workers to professors at Yale. But we began to reach out. And I went down into the tenements, and I remember finding one family from Maine, a woman who had been converted to member of the Church of Christ, and we got her to come, and soon two of her sisters were baptized as well, and we found, and we would hold a vacation Bible school and go down into the ghetto area and gather up children and so forth, and so we began to grow a little bit. We finally had 75 members, and we even built a church building there. So I think there's some ways in which we could give some thought to that. Well, what are some broken people? Because, you know, one of the things that respectable people don't think they need anything. They've got it all hooked, you know. They're fine. And Jesus understood that. He didn't convert a lot of the Pharisees because they were already religious. In fact, one time Jesus said, I'm going to tell you a little story. There's a Pharisee who went down to the temple one day, and he said, oh, Lord, I'm thankful for how good I am. And I happen to notice a tax collector over there, and I'm not like he is. And the tax collector said, be merciful to me, a sinner. So often, it's the broken people that are aware of their need, because we sometimes sing that song, the great physician now is here, the sympathizing Jesus. Well, he was a physician. He was both a physical physician because he did a great deal of healing, but he was a spiritual physician. Often the first thing he would say to somebody, your sins are forgiven. What did he say to the adulterous woman? You remember they dragged her there in front of Jesus. They said, and they were testing Jesus, we caught this woman. We caught her in the very act of adultery. And you can almost picture her head bowed, ashamed. It's interesting they didn't haul the man in. They just hauled the woman. But anyway, they said, okay, what are you going to do? Because the old law says you need to stone her. Jesus stopped for a minute, wrote something in the sand. We're not quite sure what it was. But then he looked around and he said, okay, you that are without sin, cast the first stone. Well, the crowd sort of disappeared after a while. And Jesus looked at her and said, well, I see there's nobody here to condemn you. And she said, no. He said, neither do I condemn you. He said, go and sin no more, but I forgive you. Can you imagine how changed her life was because Jesus loved her. Jesus forgave her. So we could look around and maybe we could discover some people that are broken. We have a terrible problem of addiction in the United States. You know, last year, more people died as a result of drug overdose than were killed in car accidents, or on the other hand, that were killed by guns. Both, we think of car accidents and gun deaths as being a very high death rate. But we have a problem in America. And wouldn't it be helpful if we would discover people like that and help them heal themselves and tell them that we loved them and cared for them. You know, one of the things that made Alcoholic Anonymous so powerful in terms of changing lives and healing alcoholics was, number one, they had to admit they were an alcoholic, and number two, they had to say they can't do it by themselves and they had to look to a higher power. Well, that has a little hint of the gospel, doesn't it? You can't do it by yourself, and you've got to look to a higher power. Now, our higher power is Jesus Christ through God. And we, as I say, we call him in one song the great physician. Are we sang that song today, Christ for the World We Sing. And we said, we bring the world of Christ, the world to Christ we bring with loving zeal, the poor and them that mourn, the faint and overborn, sin sick and sorrow worn, whom Christ doth heal. That's what we sang this morning. Well, maybe there's some people that have just been released from prison and they've realized their mistake and they could be changed. I know there's a church in Abilene, Texas that has a prison ministry, or another church in Galveston had a program for the homeless. They fed the homeless and then they had a Bible class for them. They didn't force them to come. They didn't say, you're not going to get any food unless you come to this class, but they opened it up. So then we can look around. And the immigrants, you know, I'm despair over the kind of harsh words that are spoken about immigrants. I recognize that we have to deal with this as a legal problem, but we could deal with some compassion. These aren't people that are rapists and murderers. In fact, the statistics simply say that the immigrants don't commit as much crimes. Their crime rate is lower than the native people. And as Ronald Reagan said, he said, we would be in a sad shape if we closed the doors to our immigrants who have been so important to our nation. I read recently of a church in Fort Worth, Texas, that decided refugees came to this minister and said, you know, we're looking for a place to worship. Could we have a space, maybe outdoors, where we could have our worship service? And then finally the minister said, no, we're going to welcome you. And of course, their congregation swelled. It also diminished because some people were insulted by that and they weren't ready to be so welcoming to the refugees as the minister was. But even those who had a question finally had to say, you know, that sounds a little bit like Jesus, doesn't it? And after all, in the Old Testament, there's that passage over in Leviticus which says, you know, don't mistreat the foreigner. Treat them as well as you do yourself. You once were foreigners in the land of Egypt. And that was certainly the attitude Jesus had. So there's a lot of what I'm trying to suggest is maybe there's some broken people out there that we might have a message to. We might think of that as a way of doing that. That's actually, if I heard John Reed right, that's what they did at the Hilltop Church. They just said, you know, maybe we can build this church. Because, you know, as I said, you go out to people who are already churched, oh, they've got it all solved. Or you go to somebody who's rich and feels like that they've built themselves up by their own bootstraps and nobody can tell them what to do. You first, you know, it's a little bit like physical illness. You don't ever solve a physical illness till you diagnose it and admit it exists. You can sit at home and say, I really don't have this cancer, and you know what will happen. But one day when you finally wake up and you say, you know, I need to go to a doctor. I need to do something about this. Well, that's what we are all suffering from, is a spiritual disease. I don't care whether we've lived a pretty good life. We still need the grace of God in our lives. But sometimes it is those who are in pain, spiritual pain, or even in physical pain. But I'm talking about who realize something's wrong in my life. And we feel like we have the right medication. But we've got to often do something for the person. We've got to actually extend a hand. You know, you don't generally are helped a great deal if somebody's looking down on you. If somebody says, I'm not so sure you're worthy of me. No, they're just human beings. And perhaps had you or I been in that position, we might have been in the same place. We don't know all the circumstances of people's lives. And, you know, many of us were blessed to be raised in a Christian home with loving, nurturing parents and had a sufficient amount of this world's goods that we didn't know what poverty was. But there are people out there that know what poverty is. There are people that are homeless. And not all those homeless people are lazy. In fact, many of those homeless people lost a job, suddenly faced eviction, couldn't find a job. And there they are. We're fortunate not to have that. But we have something to give. Now, I don't happen to be involved. I do give to financially to organizations who help the homeless, but I'll confess that I'm not working, you know, full-time in ministering to the homeless. But I'm just saying that in our discussions about this church and the ways in which we as a church who are in decline might find a way to reverse that decline and actually help some people. And because if we really take seriously the example of Jesus, he came to seek and save the lost. And I guess I'll close by a favorite passage of mine. It's over in the 25th chapter of Matthew. It's the only judgment scene that Jesus ever painted. And it's interesting when he said, you're going to be there in the judgment. Some are going to be on the right, some on the left, to use the graphic illustration of the sheep and the goats. And did you know, it wasn't a doctrinal test that Jesus was saying. He said, let's see, I'm going to check this list here. Were you baptized by immersion? Were you this and that? And just go down the list. No, he said, you over on the right, you know, when people were hungry, when somebody's hungry, you gave them to eat when I was hungry. Or when I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick and in prison, you visited me. They say, well, when did we do that for you? He said, as much as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. And then, of course, to those on the left, he said, you didn't do those things. So that's something to think about. And we'll always, and sometime in closing, we let it be known that if you have a need, a spiritual need for prayer, or that if you have a need for your own life to be forgiven and regenerated, the invitation is open to you, and we'll stand and sing.